The Running Won't Save You podcast is proudly sponsored by our friends at X-Miles. They're the one-stop pit stop nutrition shop for all of your nutritional needs. From Striker to Stroop Waffles, from Morton to Mountain Fuel, they've got it all down at X-Miles, and you don't even have to go to the shop. You can go onto their website, which is xmiles.co.uk, and order to your heart's content. And the best thing about X-Miles is they have this incredible build a nutrition plan feature, where basically you put in your race, you put in how far it is, how long you reckon it's going to take, how much you weigh, and it works out how many carbohydrates and calories you need before, during, and after. And you can basically add products to your list, and it will tell you exactly how many calories, carbohydrates, proteins, fats, sugars, fibres, salts, caffeines, potassium, sodiums you're getting, which makes life very fucking easy and stops you from having to read the tiny, tiny writing on the back of the packets. X-Miles have given us a discount code. It is 10%, which is actually quite a lot when you're ordering in bulk. And the best thing about this is you can do it as a kind of pick and mix. So you don't need to order 26,000 Morton gels to get free delivery. You can get basically a couple of them, a couple of Stroop waffles. I'm obsessed with Stroop waffles. A couple of bits of scratch, a couple of pH gels, whatever it is that you want to put in your bucket. Make a little delicious basket and then get it delivered free with that 10% discount, which is quite a lot when you are ordering in bulk. My cupboard currently looks like an X-Miles storeroom because I just really do like ordering things and getting loads of money off. So go to the X-Miles website, xmiles.co.uk, order what you need, put in the discount code RWSY10 for 10% off, and away you go. As you've probably realised, this podcast does contain swearing. It contains chats about mental health. It contains chats about sometimes about suicidal ideation. It's very, very honest, and it's definitely not the sort of thing you want to put on in the car during the school run. You have been warned. Let's crack on. Welcome to a very, 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 very special episode of the Running Won't Save You podcast. It's a spine special. It is Tuesday, the 20th of January. At 10 a.m. and I am here with my friends, my good friends, Holly Stables.
Hello.
Hello. And Kirsty Reid.
Hello.
All of us are absolutely fucked.
One of us is a lot more fucked than the others.
Yeah, only one of us ran the race. So, this is a high energy pod. Strap in and enjoy as we break through the mess that is the spine race. Where to begin?
Firstly, I think we should ask. Well, I think firstly, I think we should say congratulations because
thanks.
You did it, and it was exhausting just watching. I'll be honest, you forget actually when you're watching something like this online, it's a long time. You know, like you get up and you go, "Oh yeah, she's still going." Yeah, okay, go to sleep. Yeah, okay. Oh, hang on a minute. It was how many days was ago was it that I was, you know, it's so weird. It's like, because obviously I've done something similar, but when you're in it, it's just, you're in it, aren't you? But as people outside of it, watching it, it's like, oh my God, you get really excited at the beginning and everyone's like, oh, it started, let's watch everything. And then after a while, it's like, oh my God, I'm going to have to keep this up for days.
Oh, work. I got stuff to do.
Yeah. It's a big old slog.
It's really long.
I was on the checkpoint from Tuesday to Saturday, and it felt like 266 days. Yeah. By the end of it, we were like,
it's like a horror movie.
Everybody is so spread out. Like we would have like six runners, then we'd look at the track and we go, oh, we haven't got anyone else for 6 hours.
Yeah,
basically, we could go to Lanzarote for the weekend, come back, and then still be here.
Yeah, it is astounding. It is absolutely astounding. But it's huge mate. Congratulations. Just incredible. So many messages from people who were, following. I had messages from people that you'd coached saying, haven't done any work this week. I've just been following Ali's tracker. And obviously everybody at work were following.
John Barton was literally following.
Yeah, he was.
Popping out from behind Tussocks with his camera phone.
He's so excited.
Yeah, I thought that was funny as well, you saying about, because I was obviously having conversations with Damo, and it was stuff like, yeah, I'm going to go down the course maybe tomorrow to see her or whatever. And I'm like, tomorrow? Oh yeah, I suppose she's still... It's so weird. It's like, it's going to take him so long to get to that checkpoint to see someone. It's just very odd, you know?
Mm. And he's big on, like, he's got a lot of athletes out there, so he will go, and obviously his media team, so he could go and support... A lot, like, you're not supposed to support anyone. And we were very aware of that, me and him. I was like, I don't really want to see you because I don't want time penalties. So I saw him once at the Brunclough Mountain Rescue checkpoint, which was like 28 miles in where he was working. And I didn't see him after that. But he tried to run up at the start, Kindy tried to run up back at Kinder, but he couldn't because the snow was waist deep. So he couldn't actually. He said he got to the top, and the last three people were coming through, like, because it was so awful up there. But like, you do look at it and you're like, okay, I did a spreadsheet, right? And I was like, right, I reckon 100 and. I think I've got down to 110 hours. I was like, that's fine, 110 hours. Bear in mind, I think Anna Troup finished 103, 106.
106.
I did not finish 110 hours. I think I finished 135 hours or something.
No, you finished at 130 hours.
Right, but still, that is 20, what, 5 hours? That's a day longer. It was a day
Day,
longer than I
right.
thought. And
Yeah.
I was like, how the fuck is this taking so long? And I remember talking to Matt Neal, who's done the race loads of times, kept bumping into Matt Neal at checkpoints because he's got very, very, like, his sleep strategy is stay at the checkpoint for 4 hours every checkpoint. So I would catch up with the checkpoint, then he'd whiz off. Then I'd get in as he was leaving. And even he was like, this is taking fucking ages because it just was underfoot was so hard to manage. Like, so hard to manage. Like, there was no way, there was no bit where you could just go, oh, I'm going to be able to run for 10 miles now, because you couldn't, because it was so icy and it was like a weird black ice you couldn't see, or like snow, or it was the visibility was awful, or it was raining, or it was snowing, or there was clag. Or like you were on Crossvale and you couldn't see anything. It was like a whiteout on Crossvale. I said that was actually scary and really mentally fucking draining getting across it. And then there wasn't fucking about checkpoints. My dwell time was 17 hours for the whole thing.
Yes, I was actually just going to touch on that. We can do that now as
Yeah,
we
do
can.
stat. Do stat. Do stat.
Right. Close up.
I'm a stat man.
So
Skibidi.
I actually thought I'd have a look at the stats, and I also wanted to compare, which I know you can't really, the summer spine a little bit as well. So I looked at the dwell time, and I obviously looked at Anna, and this is where Anna is a trooper. Da, 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 da. She did 106 hours, and her dwell time, this is where she just doesn't have really any dwell time. It's like it's interesting to see how fast she's moving or not moving, but her dwell time is 8 hours and 24 minutes. But you compare that to the summer spine, which took her 85 hours, and her dwell time is 5.5 hours. So there you go. And then you look at Fiona, who's in second. I went down to you, Ali, because I just wanted to have a look. So Fiona took 112 hours. So she was, what, 6 hours behind Anna. And she took 13 and a half hours dwell time. And then you've got Sophie, who is 117 hours. And her dwell time was 12 hours and 20 minutes. So less than Fiona. Then you've got Alicia, the. Is that Alicia? I think that's how you said her name.
Yeah, the American.
She did 119 hours. So she was a couple of hours behind Sophie, and she took 16 hours of dwell time.
Yeah, her knees were fucked though. She's come back from a real massive injury, so she was like super knee-ish.
Yeah, niggly knee-ish. But
Yeah.
then the interesting one was Victoria. I think it's Victoria Morris, who I was watching her quite closely. And I think she dropped out before. I think it's, is it her second attempt at this? I
Yeah,
might be
she dropped out Tourside last year, right?
wrong.
And she's come third at Dragon's Back. She's a great runner. She kept saying to me, I kept bumping into her at checkpoints. She kept saying to me, I need to be at work on Saturday morning.
That's right,
So
yeah.
I'm going to pull out. If I don't get to Greenhill at this time, I'm going to pull out. And I was like, I think you're on crack. And I said to her, I'll ring in sick for you. I will do anything for you. I was like, you can't just stop when you're doing so well because you've got a bit of work. She was
Yeah.
adamant. She's like, no, somebody else is off sick and my boss has stopped watching. I'm like, I can't understand this logic, but okay. So
She
she was on a
was
mission.
at work at 4 o'clock in the morning on Saturday. That's when she
What?
started, and she works on a farm. So it's
Whoa.
very physical. Yeah.
Oh yes, that's it. I think I heard she's got to go back and she
Yeah.
had to feed animals. That's what it was. Yeah.
Yeah, and she
She
didn't sit down in our checkpoint.
Well, saying
She
that though,
just stood.
she took 121 minutes. So she was 2 hours behind Alicia, but her dwell time was 26 hours and 39. She had the biggest dwell time. And I was watching that throughout. I noticed that. So she spent a lot of time at checkpoints, or some of them. Remember, this dwell time is in checkpoints. It's not if you've had naps along the way as well.
Yeah.
Then you've got Linda, who you were with for a while.
Linda! Go on, Linda. Linda's on the Tour de Géant.
Tour de Géant, I did some looking at her as well. 127 hours. She had 20 hours dwell time. And then Ali Bailey, 130 hours, and you had 17 hours and 49 minutes.
I'm just slow.
No, you're not slow. You're actually sort of in that middle park, I'd say, in terms of dwell time. So I think that's actually quite good.
I did have some dwell time at the Church of Burness as well. I went to sleep in the Church of
Yeah.
Burness, and then also I kept laying down. I laid down twice on the path, and because I was like, I'm gonna die, I'm just gonna die here. And then, but yeah, I think that was actually right. I didn't fuck about in the checkpoints.
No, I think your dwell time was really good. If you compare it as well, I know it's different, but the Northern Challenge, you had 6 hours and 17 minutes slot in the summer as a dwell time in 53 hours.
Yeah.
Interestingly, Nikki Spinks and Elaine took 56 hours for this North Challenge and had almost exactly the same dwell time as you. Yeah.
I'm just moving this off the fire because it's going to get really, really hot. So I'm just going to try not to burn myself.
And then in comparison, Sebastian and James White had exactly the same dwell time in the spine this year, 12 hours.
Is
So
that all?
there's your stats for you. James Hargreaves, who's third, 15 hours and 10 minutes. So there you go on dwell times. Actually, quite impressive the dwell times, I think, considering the conditions. Would you think, Kirsty? I don't know.
Yeah, I think so, because I think, like you said, it isn't just about sleeping, is it? It's about
Faffing.
kit faff. And I probably can't comment on it because in our checkpoint, I was at the Burness checkpoint, which is
You've got a
26 miles
restriction,
from.
haven't you, there, of how long you could stay? Is that
Yeah,
right?
so you could only stay 30 minutes. We didn't have drop bags. You couldn't sleep there. So whereas last year I was in Hawes, so I saw the kind of whole spectrum of, people, what they do when they come in, how efficient they are, how organized their bags are, how long they sleep for, what, how. I think a lot of it is kind of how well your brain is working by that point, which.
Hawes is the promised land as well, because before you get to Hawes, you've got 100 kilometres of nothing, right? So you don't see a drop bag or anything else. So when you get to Hawes, you are like, fuck it, I'm gonna spend some decent time at Hawes. People spend a long time there, don't they?
Yeah. In fact, we were kicking people out last year because they were exceeding the, is it 6 hours or 8 hours? I can't
It's eight
remember.
hours, but I tell you what, if you're gonna have beds with white fluffy duvets and
Yes, I
pillows,
saw
which is
that.
what they had,
Yeah.
it was un real. It was so comfortable. I was like, do I need my sleeping bag? They're like, oh, no. And also, being female, I think at Hawes, actually, I was in with the girl. So I had like Alyssa and Victoria, but they left and it ended up with me and Linda being the only people. So we just basically, me and Linda were just on holiday together, sharing a room. Most of the, and like towards the end, I was by myself in the bedrooms because they're single sex. So it was fucking lovely.
Mel was showing the bedrooms, I think, on one of the updates, and it did. I did think it was like, oh, it looks like really nice, comfy, and all the heating's on. It's nice and squishy. But I had this image of like the people coming in last and trying to get into those beds, and they're all brown with mud, where everyone was. Could you imagine? Everyone slept in them, and it's like soiled. They're like,
Yeah,
they
and
don't look
like it's funny
wrong.
because the further down the course you get, the worse the sleeping situation gets. So you get
Oh.
to like Horleystead Farm, which is like an artificial checkpoint, and it's like a shed on a farm owned by this woman called Helen. But honestly, it might as well be the fucking Ritz because you're so pleased because she's got soup, and there's this bed, and it's covered in like
Hair.
blankets and the sacks, like
Yeah.
and sleeping bags, and it's had like 1,000 people lay in it. And she's got these two new dogs, these two little skanky dogs that jump everywhere. I loved them. And like, there was a bloke in there who obviously didn't like dogs, but I was laying on the bed with the dogs, and I could see him looking at me, thinking, "I want to get in that bed, and you're soiling it." And I was like, "Get it, roll around with dogs and mud." But you get in it, and Lawrence, my friend Lawrence, got in it with two women. He had a threesome in the bed at Horleystead, and
Poorly
like.
said.
Yeah, and he's like, you put your face onto like the sleeping bags and the sacks, and you can smell 1,000 spine runners, but you don't fucking care. And it's the same at the church. You just sleep on the fucking floor. So you go from deluxe Hawes all the way down to like the church at Burnett, the floor of the church, or even hut two, like even or hut one even, because you're not allowed to stay in hut two long enough, sleeping on a fucking wooden slat. And you just don't care by that point. So, but Hawes is banging. But Kirsty's checkpoint, Burness, that came after the portal to madness. So I think that she got the real sharp end of people being fucked. Because I mean, Kirsty, it's just fucking nuts there, isn't it?
Could I tell you something about the church first?
Yeah, go on.
A runner left a dehydrated meal in there. It's sealed in a bag. It wasn't like open or anything. And we went down and collected it because we thought, oh, maybe somebody else will have this if they need it. And when we looked at it, it was just completely covered in mouse droppings. It had only been in there a couple of hours, and the mice had been at it, nibbling away at it, and it was absolutely disgusting. So you were just basically lying amongst mice in that church.
That church is quite interesting actually, because Ali, I don't know, you probably, I mean, I was sending you messages and I don't know obviously if you saw something, but me and Kirsty had had a conversation. God knows, when was it? I don't even know when it was, Kirsty. And we
It
were
was on
saying,
the 78th day.
and I said to you, like, I think I'm sure, pretty sure she's planning to have a kip at the next station, not realizing that's where you were. And then you were like, yeah, I hope so, because the church and further on, it is so freezing. It's going to be so cold tonight. I really hope she doesn't do that. And then I think we were both having a conversation, and it was like, I'd sent a message to you, Ali, saying, yeah, you need to rest now. It's going to be really cold. Don't sleep in the church. And then Kirsty was like, oh shit, she's moving. And you were like on the way to the church, and I was like, oh no, if she sees that message, she's just going to go into a meltdown. So I was like, abort, abort, like delete the
Were you
message.
deleting? Is that when you deleted those
That's
messages?
why I deleted those messages.
Yeah.
I was like, you need to stop now. Don't go on. It'll be carnage. You can't sleep in the church. You'll die. And then I was like, oh shit, she's going to sleep in the church. Right, let's say nothing.
Although some people slept in Bellingham and said, even though it was more comfortable, it was really noisy, so they couldn't really
It's
sleep.
so noisy. And I was okay. So what happened was when I got to Bellingham, so I had a really interesting experience in that I. Okay, so the spine was everything I wanted it to be. Honestly, it was 100% pure spine. The weather was great because it was absolute dog shit and it had everything, and it was just fucking brilliant. I started off with Alice, running with Alice Kershaw, who's one of my mates. I lost Alice; she vanished into the ether because she was always going to be faster than me. She then fell into a river, fell into a river, and was
No.
dragged down the course. Got out of the river and kept fucking going. Got changed to Brun Club. She also fell over, really hurt her back, so it was out because she'd hurt her back later down the line. My friend Ross broke his wrist at Wessenden, so he's gone by falling over. People were falling over left, right, and centre. It was an absolute nightmare. I buddied up with some people, and I didn't ever think I'd do that, so I did. I ended up buddying up with like Linda and Texas John. And was it just Linda and Texas John
It's
at
like
that
a van
point?
as well. There was three of
Not
you.
yet, not yet.
Yeah,
Just me, Linda, and Texas John, right?
oh.
We went over Francis Fell together. And then we found Ben, who was helping a man who'd hurt himself. And I gave him some Solpadeine Max and went to get Mountain Rescue to help him. Really, I should be getting thousands of hours back for that, but I didn't. I'm such a hero. Then Ben joined me, Texas John, and Linda. And off we went, gallivanting, right? And we did the whole Cam Road on our own together. On our own, but together. Cam Road was one of the worst bits. It was fucking dog shit weather. It was apocalyptic and it was awful. Got to Hawes, went to sleep, made a plan, left Hawes together. And I was like, this is it. We're a crew now. However, Texas John didn't wake up. So we took on Matt Flynn. We got a new one. We replaced Texas John very quickly. He was out and we replaced him with Matt Flynn. And then we did Crossfell and all those bits with Matt. But the boys were quicker than us. So Ben and Matt were quicker than us. And, me and Linda were behind, and then Linda was like, she was really lagging on the way into Langdon Beck, and I'm so bad with people lagging because I'm like, I just want to get there. I just don't have patience, which is awful, but it's just how I am, right? I'm not one of those like, I'll stick with you and be nice people. I'm like, fucking hurry up. And when I got to Langdon Beck, I just got really upset because I was like, oh, fucking hell, I can't, like, I'm not doing running my own race. This is rubbish. Phoned Damien, got really upset. Hannah Rickman was there. Like, it was my only proper meltdown. And then decided that from then on I was just going to do what I wanted to do. So I did leave Langdon Beck with them. But when we got to the next checkpoint at Alston, they said they were going to sleep for an hour and a half, and I wanted 4 hours. So I just let them go. I just fucking let them go because I was like, I can't. I can't like sacrifice my race just to be with people. So I had all that time with people and made friends, and it was really great. But then I had a long time on my own after Alston, which is exactly what I wanted. But when I got to Bellingham, this is the point of the story. I thought, because I knew I was top 10, but I thought people are going to drop. I could probably like snake my way towards top five. I bet Linda's asleep at Bellingham, so I'm not going to sleep. So I got into Bellingham and I rushed through. Then I was like, do you know what you could do? Just check the tracker. And she left. She fucking hadn't slept. So then at Benadryl, I was like, do you know what? You could have some extra soup. You could chill out a little bit. You could put some extra clothes on. And so I did. So I probably took an extra half hour at Benadryl. So I was like, I'm not going to catch her. And it didn't matter anyway, because it was like, it's a top 10 situation, not a top three situation. And then I cracked one on my own. But that bit from Benadryl to Burness was like the worst, because I was so tired. And it's always the worst. And it's like you go through this hellish portal where you are fucking so tired. Because what day was that? Like day four?
Yeah, four,
You are
four.
so fucking tired, and it's dark, and you're on your own. And that bit of running. Have you done that bit, Kirsty, Bellingham to Burness? Yeah,
Yeah.
we did it with me, didn't you? We went out with the girls.
Oh, we
It's
did it the other day as well. Went out with.
fucking. It's just. Can't explain why it's so shit, but it is. And I was so tired. I was running down there's a fire track that's down here, it's like 5K. And so you should be able to run it. And Holly, I was just thinking about interval sessions, and I put on the Prodigy really loud. I was trying to run down the hill, but I couldn't because I was just so tired. I was like, you're gonna just fall asleep. I just kept looking at the bushes and thinking, go to sleep in the bushes. When I got down to Burness, I kept thinking I saw Kirsty coming towards me because I knew she was working there. But it wasn't. It was just weird shit that I was seeing. And then eventually I did see her. And when I saw her, I was like, please, can you hold my hand? I made her hold my hand.
Oh, I was going to ask. I've got quite a few questions about that, but it was nice to hear that you felt a little bit competitive in the middle of that race. I'm surprised you've admitted to that.
That's at the end. That's really at the
Well,
end.
yeah, but it's still, well, even at the end, it's really interesting that you felt that you wanted to check the tracker and be a little bit competitive. That's great.
But yeah, because I was like, I wonder what, because this it is a question of what's possible, isn't it? And it doesn't really
Definitely.
matter. And I'm really, at the end of the day, it's my first go, and I'm really fucking pleased. I don't feel just depressed or disappointed. I don't feel like I could have done a better job. I
Yeah.
feel like I maybe could have spent a little bit less time at checkpoints. But if I'm going to tick off all the things I wanted to do, I cuddled dogs, I hung out with my photographer mates, I
Petted
spoke to
ponies.
Helen, I patted ponies, I went into, I had noodles with John Bamber, I went into,
Sat on many laps.
I did everything you should do on the spine. I went into the Dufton Cafe and had a burger. Like, I did everything I should do, and it was like spine 101. And I also managed myself really well.
Yeah.
And if we're going to look at fucking stats and look at how many people fucked it or how many people DNF'd due to things that were not their fault,
Yeah, 100%.
you have to take that time to look after yourself. And once you've done it once, you have a much better idea about like where you can shave bits of it off.
I love the fact that you said that you experienced everything that you wanted to experience. And I can tell, I could just tell by, you didn't put loads of stories up, you put a few up, and also just speaking to like Kirsty and speaking to Damien and Mel and Sarah, I was talking to as well. They were brilliant. Just giving me feedback. I was like, actually, yeah, your mental attitude, like you were really pretty upbeat. I think it was only, like you said, one meltdown. Damo said that you'd had that real low, but that was the only time out of that whole time. Yeah, of course you probably had like, oh God, what the hell am I doing? Get me out of here. So that was amazing. Why do you think that was though? Is it because you'd prepared better than you've ever prepared before? Is it because the people you decided to be with some people? Like, why do you think that was?
Having your friends, like having your support group on the phone. So I knew I had people there that I loved. Like Mel was there working, Damien was there working, Kirsty was there working. Kirsty was such a carrot for me because she was so far into the race. And I was like, I want to get to Kirsty. I want to get to Kirsty. And the thing is, I think people might be like, oh, well, that's not fair. It's like you got support, but it's like, I would have known someone at that checkpoint. I knew Trish, who was the medic at that checkpoint. Like I know people because I've worked on spine for a while. And so there's always someone there that you kind of know. And there's always someone there to have a carrot. And even if that carrot is hut two or hut one, like I want to get to hut one and see Ollie. Like I knew Ollie was in hut one. Was he in hut one or hut two? He's in one of the huts. Having people like outside that you knew had your back or you could talk to was a massive deal for me, and it really helped. But also going into it and being like, this is going to be hard. But I kept saying, it's quite funny, I kept saying, this is going to be hard, but I'm going to have an amazing adventure. It's going to be really good fun. Damien said to me, it's going to be shit. And I was like, can you stop saying that? And he's like, but it will be miserable because it is miserable. And I'm like, it might be miserable for you, but it will not be miserable for me. It'll be really hard, and but I will find a way. And I want to be presented with problems because that's the point. Like, I want to be presented with the problem so I can then try and solve the problem. And I started throwing up quite early on, and I was like, this is bullshit. I'm going to have to solve this now. And it was really annoying. but I did solve it and I managed to stop it. And there was other little things that happened along the way where I was like, I need to solve this problem now. Having the people with me, grouping up, I cannot fucking recommend it enough. If you can find a group of people you like, hold on to them. And then, but then also be aware of like, this is my race. I'm not gonna. They came in before me, that Matt and Ben and Linda, and that's fucking fine. But you need to know when you need to be by yourself, when you need to be with other people. And that's really important. And I think it was just a case of, I can't really tell you what it was, but I think it was the support and the kindness and the love that I had going into it that made a massive difference. I honestly do think that. Because I was really calm about the whole thing. I freaked out that, I got really upset that one time. I rang Damien up, like he was really helpful and calm and had a sleep. And yeah, and it was all okay. And the only time it was bad was bandaging to Burness when I was really tired. And I came in, and I don't know, Kirsty, I can't really remember what state I was in, but I do remember everyone being really nice to me. And I do, but I felt like a baby when I got in there. I just felt like a little baby. Like I was like, I was just so, it was so cold. That was the biggest problem, was it was so fucking cold.
I think everyone when they got to Burness was in a bit of a state. I mean, I think that's the nature of the Burness checkpoint, is you're 26 miles from the finish, so you're 240 odd miles in. You've dealt with probably a lot of the pro you know, you've dealt with probably feet and stuff like that. But I think every, you know, injury, if injuries have presented themselves, you're probably out already. So I think when people got to Burness, the biggest problem was fatigue. I think everyone was tired, really struggling to make decisions. And our job was just to keep everybody safe, just to make sure, you know, as I was walking people in, I didn't treat you any differently to anybody else, Ali, and I wouldn't have done that because
What do you mean you were holding hands with everybody?
I would have gladly held anybody's hands. We
Did
were
you hold
hugging.
hands with Sebastian Michon?
No, because he was so badass, he didn't need it. He came in, ate some food, lay down, set his alarm on his watch for 3 minutes before the checkpoint. He had to be out of the checkpoint, then just
Wow.
hopped up. And then he was out.
I did see Kirsty in the last video, the last spine video, or the last ones I watched. I think it was episode 6. The guy that ran in, he must have been beating. He was the last person, and he ran in, and you're just standing there, and he just collapsed on the floor next to you, and you just stand there. And I was going, Kirsty, touch him.
We were checking times to check because he
Yeah.
was trying to get in. He was trying to squeak in before
Oh,
the
bless him. Did he squeak
checkpoint
in?
closed. So. He
He
did,
did,
yeah.
didn't
The
he? Yeah.
last two, they were the only people I saw running on that track.
Yeah, he was
Wow.
going for it. He was being chased in by the other person who was helping, just like, come on, come
Yeah.
on. He literally bit Kirsty into the wall and like slumps on the floor.
It was really close. But that was also like that last morning was really stressful. Well,
Yeah.
yeah, I mean, it was all quite stressful in our checkpoint because people had 30 minutes to do everything they needed to do. So if they need to dress their feet, if they need to change their clothes, they need to get
Oh.
some
But they
food.
also don't have a drop bag there, do they? So
No, they don't have a
it's
drop.
their own survival mechanism, whatever they've got in their bag.
Yeah, so they and some of them we had to like charge their trackers as well. So you're trying to do all of that and then kind of get them out within 30 minutes. And on that last morning, everybody was really tearful. There were like men, you know, grown men who were like walking into that kind of porch area, looking at each other and then just start crying. And it was really emotional, like really, really emotional. I was like quite shocked. But I think that was the hardest thing was. Just trying to, you know, we had a safety team and a medical team there to check that everybody was okay to continue because that last section is no joke, is it? When you're
No.
up in the Cheviots, you're really tired. You know, you're moving slowly, everyone's really cold. So when you were walking in, we're saying, you know, how well have you eaten? Are you doing okay? Have you got any problems that you need to sort out here? How can we help you? And then as they were leaving, it was how many warm layers have you got? Have you got more you can put on? Have you got your goggles? Here's the weather forecast. And it was quite stressful, but honest to God, like we just saw some absolutely amazing people. The people on the checkpoint were amazing. So it was me and Sue on the day shift, and then Tawera and Mel on the night shift, and they were just the best people you could possibly be with. They were just incredible, and I've no doubt that they saved some people's races. They were just incredible people. And then some of the people we had through, there was like a Dutch father and son.
Yes, I saw those. They were brilliant.
Oh, and they were
Races go
really,
well.
they were high up in the field, weren't they? They were just amazing. And they'd done it, I think, last year and then had to DNF. And they were incredible. Like Victoria Morris was incredible. Had a really good chat with Elaine and Nikki when they came through.
Right laugh, because it seemed like they were having a right laugh, those two.
Not with their own birthday. They looked,
Oven.
Everyone was shell shocked. Everyone was shell shocked. I think everyone was really like traumatized by the time we got there. And but Fiona Horsfield, she was amazing. Like, I had a lovely chat with her as well. But yeah, like, we just saw some incredible people. It was, if you want to do something that warms your heart and like teaches you how amazing human beings are, go and spend a week on the spine. That's all I can
Yeah,
say.
they basically say to you those 0.5 checkpoints, you've got 30 minutes and no one's going to help you. And to a point, that's true, you have to help yourself, but there is always someone helping you. So at Malham Tarn, they filled up my little exped meal and they sat me down, made me cups of tea, and everyone's having like a real laugh. And it's really hard because you've got to leave, but they kind of fill you back up. And at Kirsty's, they sat me down and got me it. Kirsty's checkpoint was a bit like being at school, like primary, it's like a primary school sort of lunch area.
That's the vibe I go for,
That's what it
like
felt
in
like.
all
And
life.
there was like plastic seats, plastic covers on the
Those
table.
tiny little chairs.
Yeah, tiny. It felt like tiny little chairs, cups of tea that were very small. But I had a cup of tea and a hot chocolate. And then they would be like, "Do you want a biscuit?" And the biscuit was like an Aldi version of a penguin. And it was very sort of quiet and weird in there. People kept sort of coming and going, and you could sometimes hear people shouting in the corridor. Do you know what it's like?
No.
It was like being in a mental hospital. It was like being in the waiting room for a mental hospital because you could sort of hear shouts.
Well done, Kirsty. You must have done such a good five.
Wow, great.
No, because it was Burness. But then they were like, "Do you want a sandwich for the journey?" And I was like, "You can't do that." She's like, "I'll make a sandwich for the journey." One of them made me a sandwich for the journey. Just put it in my little pouch. And when I got to the Cheviot, I was like, "I'm gonna have my sandwich for the journey." And I opened it up, and it was all squashed. But I ate my sandwich for the journey.
Fish paste.
It was cheese and mayonnaise, and I was like, "That is such a kind thing." And I'm pretty sure they did that for other people. I'm pretty sure they sent people off with little packed lunches, and it was like, I was like, "I don't want bread; it'll go wet." But honestly, the love that was packed with, it was like that, and a packet of Snack Right crisps and a biscuit. I was just like, "Oh, this is race saving."
Officially, there was nothing there apart from water, but we'd been given like biscuits and crisps and stuff like that. We had loads of bread, we had rice pudding and stuff. So basically, we just had stuff out on the table, and then if we thought they hadn't, they perhaps needed a bit more food or perhaps didn't have enough food to get to the finish or whatever, we were just giving them whatever we had, offering the same to everybody else. But I think the reason. I think we were quite conscious that we wanted to be quite a quiet checkpoint because people were coming in quite traumatized. And they were saying like there was music and stuff at other checkpoints and it was like a different sort of vibe. But I think ours, there was never like quite often there was just one person in or two people in or maximum of five or six people in. So it was and they came in fairly traumatized and really, really tired. And then they got quite a lot of decisions to make. Are you going to sleep at the church? Are you going to go straight away? Go up over the top straight away. What do you need to do to leave here? At the point that they're no longer capable of making decisions, a lot of them. It was really interesting.
I keep thinking it was like an intensive care ward. Everyone goes in after a massive operation and everyone's like really quiet.
Felt like
These
that.
people,
Oh,
and then
I'll
they
feed
go
that.
out.
I'll feed that back next time we get some speakers.
It was lovely. No, it was lovely. It was like so. And then yeah, they'd obviously had to go out and get in the church to go to sleep, which I remember the church being warm because it was fucking summer. When I woke up, I looked at my watch said -7. It was fucking freezing in there. I don't know how I managed to go to sleep. And that was the hardest bit, was waking up and going, "Now you have to get out of here and go and do 26 miles over the Cheviot." That was the hardest bit. And I sort of felt my thing on my shoulder. It was like, I could just press a button. But I was not going to press a button. But when I woke
That was a
up,
mouse. That was probably a mouse.
it probably was. Did you leave a note for me in my cup,
No.
Kirsty?
No.
Because someone had written a note and put it in my cup
What'd they
in the
say?
church. It said, "Keep going." It said, you're
Oh.
great." Did you write that?
No, there was a safety team keeping an eye on people in the church
Because
and stuff.
someone had got my cup and put it next to my bag, and in it there was a little note written in pencil, and it said, "You're great. Wrap up warm. Keep on going. You can do this." It made me
Did
cry.
it say I watched you sleep?
Yeah, it was
Yeah,
from
I was just
Mike.
watching you sleep.
It was from
Yeah,
Big
I
Mike.
watched you sleep. Yeah.
Harmless fans of the sport.
Was it from God?
Yeah, I was gonna say it was from the Holy Spirit. He's
It's
watching
a
me and he
well.
just.
I thought the fact that I was a witch would keep me warm because I thought bits of me start to catch fire in there and it'd be great for everyone, but it didn't.
You didn't take the altar with you, did you?
No, I did find amazing skull at Hornister, but it was too big to carry. So,
You mind if I ask you some like quick fire questions?
But I just want to say that this note in the church really did affect me and made me cry quite a lot because it was a bit of a moment. I've got still got it upstairs. It was a bit of a moment. Like it was like, you're gonna be okay. I don't know who put this in my cup, but whoever did, it was just fucking magical. It's like one of those magical things you'll never fucking forget ever. And it sort of made you kind of believe in, not believe in God, but believe in like someone is going to fucking look after you. It was
Watching over
pretty.
you, yeah.
Yeah, and then that, and I was snapped out of that pretty quickly by going, I need to have a poo, and there's no toilet here, and I don't want to
Okay, so
desecrate a
this is one
grave.
of my questions. Okay,
Yeah.
I noticed actually Sophie Grant wrote has written a post, a couple of posts already,
All
and
right,
she.
Sophie, over, I can't even fucking think straight.
I know, but I
Right,
did think
fucking
that. I was
day.
like, bloody hell, she's going through
Also,
already over your
Sophie,
meds.
can you stop smiling? Because you're getting old
Yes.
tits.
Oh my God, it's so funny. Yeah, toilets. Toilet.
Yeah.
That must be a massive faff when you've got a million pairs of gloves on, waterproofs. It's different, if you, and there's places to go. Obviously, when you're doing something like this, you can't be worried about, oh, look, there's someone there. But just the whole faff of it, having all those layers on and looking after yourself, is that an issue?
Yes, it
Probably.
fucking is an issue.
How do you get around that? Do you have to carry loads of wet wipes? What's the
So
deal?
in the
Sorry.
front of my pack, I had like a, you have to carry a shit kit. So you've got a shovel, which to be honest with you, you can't use because the ground's frozen, so that's not gonna happen. So you've got a shovel, you've got dog poo bags, you've got toilet roll, and you've got that's the mandatory kit. But I always take wet wipes and some Vaseline, right? So what
Yeah.
I was doing if I needed a poo, I'd go off the track, and because it was boggy, you'd be able to smash a hole in the ice with your heel. And then do the, what you needed to do, and then just flip a bit of moss over the top of it. That's what I was doing.
Yeah.
But then obviously you've got to wipe your bum, and you've got to take your, put your toilet paper into your dog poo bag, and put your
Oh.
dog poo bag somewhere. That's really important because if you don't keep wiping, sorry everybody, if you don't keep wiping your bum, you end up with like chafage on your bum, and it's a nightmare. The worst thing as a woman is you have to get take off your waterproof trousers and your trousers, squat down because otherwise you're going to piss all over yourself. It's windy, and so your ass gets cold. And then you've got to make sure that you use your toilet paper because if you don't, your own urine will burn your undercarriage. And like I was wearing Nixie body pants that were sucking up any extra wee because I know that if you don't, you end up with really sore,
Inflamed bits.
inflamed bits. Danielle Butler actually said to me, this is a top tip, which I didn't use. She said, get a buff from the start and just put it between your legs and bum to stop the chafing. But I was like, I think that will make it chafe more. And the other thing is, when you're a woman, things can start to come out of your body that shouldn't be coming out of your body, blood, various bits. And it's, so it's, it, you have to look after yourself. And so I was absolutely on the money looking after my undercarriage and my bum because I know the agony of having those things chafe. And I met a lot of blokes who were like, in a lot of pain because they were sort of not looking after themselves, and they were pissing, and bits of piss were going into like their pants, or they weren't
Yeah,
looking after their
like real
bums. Yeah, and
sawness.
they were like, "This is really bad," and they, because they've not really experienced it, on the, they've not never experienced it because they've never gone that far before. I gave a lot of bepanthen to people, and I said
Yeah.
to them when they go to bed, put this on. Like, offered to take people were offering to take people's balls, tape the balls up so they stuck up. But it was fucking annoying watching the blokes just be able to get their cock out and go for a piss.
Yeah.
Whereas you're like, I've got to, like, the wind is going to blow it onto me and it's also going to make me really fucking cold. And the other thing was eating. It's really difficult because of the glove situation. I nailed the gloves. So the gloves I used the Deck Shell waterproof gloves, finger ones. They were incredible. Even when they were wet, they were warm. And I used the Montane waterproof finger gloves. And the reason I used the finger ones is because they're mandatory kit. But then I also used mitt over the top, just to innovate windproof mitt. So when it got they got really wet and it was really windy, I put a mitt over. But if you want to eat anything, you have to take off both pairs of gloves because you've got to be able to take the packet off. If you do it with your mouth, it's gonna, you're gonna lose a bit of rubbish or whatever. And if you want to wipe your ass, if you want to take your pants down, if you want to do anything, it's annoying. So I did have my gloves were clipped to my jacket, and I didn't lose any pairs of gloves, which I was really pleased about. I took like nine pairs of gloves. I used four.
That's really good insight, I think, for people doing anything like this. No one really talks about, that's why I wanted to just talk about the toilet thing. No one really talks about it, and it's something that I found out when I did my first time after the UTMB, where obviously I had the shits the whole way, but I had the worst, yeah, chafing, it's swelling, everything, and it is about looking after yourself. So I did want to just check that.
Yeah,
Thank
and
you.
don't even like think you can get away with it once. You
No.
can't, you can't. You have to. Every time I got into a checkpoint, the first thing I did was refill my shit kit with new toilet paper and get rid of my little dog poo bag full of toilet paper because if you miss it once, you end up in agony for like days. And it's just something you don't need to be, that doesn't need to be painful, so don't do it.
Okay, something in your pack that you didn't use at all.
Compass.
Brilliant. Feet. What state are they in? Do you have any?
Oh, you're so beautiful.
Okay, getting a close up. Oh, it's not bad.
They're perfect. They're absolutely perfect. I got two little blisters on the normal places. And I got at Langdon Beck, I went and said, I got them, I milked them all out. And then I put fleecy web on and some tape, just two on the sides. I covered them with sex lube every time I went out, covered the little toes in sex lube every time I went out, covered the feet in sex lube so they didn't rub. I wore a pair of size sevens at the start, which my normal size. I wore size seven shoes with deck shell waterproof socks, the ones that go up to sort of mid shin. I changed my socks at every aid station. So I have got six pairs of deck shell socks. I know someone's doing well, but it was worth it. And I didn't put powder on them or anything. I just dried them out while I was asleep. And then I just put the fleecy web and the tape back on to the two that were a bit naughty. No more blisters, but they swelled right up. At Langdon Beck, I was like, I can't get my feet in my shoes, which were now the bigger shoes. So the man at Langdon Beck said, take your insoles out. And I was like, that's a good idea. Took my insoles out. And because I was wearing waterproof socks, I still had a little bit of
Cushion.
cushioning. And then they were fine after I'd taken my.
How
So
big are we your shoes? Sorry, so there were seven
they went,
stuck.
I there were seven to start, and then they went up to eight.
Oh,
And then they were
wow.
still too small. So, because they just swell my feet. So I took the insoles out. So they were then an eight and a half. And they were fine for the rest of the time. I got some bog in them. I got some bog got into the socks, which meant that the bottoms of them had like sort of bog being like pushed into them. And they also got really sore because they're trail talons, because the ground was so hard and because we had to keep putting our spikes on. It was like running in football boots. So they got sore, but nothing bad, just sore. And like your brain knows that you're getting to the end of a race. So your brain is like, this is the sorest your feet have ever fucking been. And so the last 10, 15 miles were really, really sore. And there was nothing I could do about it. I couldn't take any more painkillers. Like it was like, you just have to suck this up. And they just hurt a lot. But they're fine. Like they're much better than Dragon's Back. Yes, Kirsty.
Put my hand up. Somebody, I won't say who it was, but they were finished very high up in the race, came through our checkpoint with a spare pair of shoes in a carrier bag, like kind of on the top of their backpack. Because
What?
they weren't sure. They put a pair of shoes on Bellingham, and they were like a new pair of shoes, so they weren't really sure whether they were going to do all right in them. So they brought another pair of shoes with them.
Wow.
Amazing, isn't it?
I would have paid money for those shoes.
I know, but yeah, it just goes to show once you're carrying like 67 kilos of kit,
Yeah,
like a pair
just
of
had a
shoes
pair
might
of
be.
shoes on. Yeah.
When Sebastian came through your checkpoint, was he wearing
Carrier
his
bag.
carrier bag, or did he pick it up from you lot?
No, he didn't have it on when he came in, but he put it on when he left.
Did he have it on him already?
Yeah, it was just on him.
He picked it up somewhere, didn't he? Someone said he picked it up at one of the checkpoints.
I don't know.
I
It
probably picked it
wasn't
up off the
on.
floor. I fucking think it's brilliant.
Apparently he did find it, yeah. Someone said
Brilliant.
about all this expensive kit, and then he finishes wearing a bin
Yeah,
liner.
but so has John Kelly's done that before.
But then you see, like, Sabrina Virgie often wears a what do they call them? Like those cape things you get out in
Yeah, like the
towns when you're on
poncho.
the poncho,
Yeah.
that's it, yeah. You see a lot of people in Europe when you do a race wearing those if it's really rainy. It does make a lot of sense because it kind of protects your whole body.
Yeah, and it doesn't, and stuff in your pack doesn't get wet.
Okay, next question. Favorite checkpoint?
Probably Alston.
Okay, any point did you ever think I'm going to drop?
Yeah, in the church.
Okay.
But I did. It was only for a minute, and it was like,
Fuck this shit.
no, it was like pull yourself together. It was like, I know this sounds like a plug, but it's not a plug. But I kept thinking about things I've written in the book, and I kept thinking like, right, this is not going to get worse. Right, this is what you came for. This is the problem that has to be solved. You came for this. This is it now, and you have to be really rational. And I was like, I'm just gonna go. I was like, no, you're gonna sit and have a cup of coffee and eat your fucking meal like a good girl on the pew, and you're going to steel yourself, and you're going to get ready to go, and you're going to do it properly, and you're gonna look after yourself. You're not just gonna rush out and be like, ugh, be all dramatic. Like you're gonna do the basics well, eat, drink, you're in the warm, wait for the sun to come up because it's gonna come up in 10, 15 minutes, then you can go. And honestly, a lot of stuff I wrote in that book came to fruition. And it was like, not because I was like, oh, let's promote the book, but because I was like, you got to fucking do what you say you're going to do. You've got to have, if you do that, you give yourself confidence. So all the mistakes I'd made before, where I'd just been sort of like, oh, woe is me, I'm just going to like drag my carcass across the tube. It's like, you're not going to drag your carcass across the tube. You're going to go and live this fucking awful race and enjoy every second of it. That's what you're going to do. And you have to make a decision to do that. And yes, it's hard, but you're just going to do it. And honestly, it was very calming to do that.
Yeah. Okay. And then with that, when did you know in the race? I think I know the answer to this. Like, yeah, I've got this. This is, I'm doing this. I've got it.
Probably, well, I don't think there was ever a moment that I was like, I've got this, because I know about people pulling out in the last 4 miles. And
Yeah,
also,
exactly.
we knew about, what's her name? Joanna? Was it Joanna?
Joanna, yeah.
Johanna,
Yes, yeah.
Johanna.
Yeah, it'd be hot too, wasn't
We
it?
knew about Johanna, and we were like, and I actually did the same thing she did. So it's very easy to go that way instead of that way. And I got over on the wrong side of the stile. And I looked and I saw the slabs. I was like, that's the Pennine Way. This isn't the Pennine Way. So I got it back over the fence and on the right side. But I can see exactly what she did. And I can see exactly how she went down that hill. And I can see exactly how scared she got, because that part of the Cheviot is very scary. When you look at it, drops very dramatically and it's covered in snow. So I can see how that happened. I could see how she would have, if she'd have been with someone for a really long time and then wasn't with somebody and was that tired, you know, if she was keeping up with that amount of sleep or lack of sleep, also the longest she'd ever done was 100 miles, I can see how it happened, right? So, and also hearing about Eugenie and hearing tales, the great tales of Eugenie at Hut One, which were absolutely hilarious, very entertaining. And it was one of those things where it had gone from this is what happened to urban myth very, very quickly. Stories involving helicopters, dragons, fire. You know, all that sort of stuff. The military, him being escorted off the hill like Fidel Castro with 18 military vehicles, all sorts of amazing rumours flying around. And then I also know about the time that Eugenie pressed the button. There's a finger post that says 4.5 miles to Kirkyet Home, right? Where you come off the Cheviot. Eugenie's pressed this button there before and been rescued. So I'm like, there is no, you can't actually say I've done it until you get down to the caramel container at the bottom of the hill. Because then you've got 2 miles on the road. But I think probably about 15 miles from the end, I was like, you've done it. Like, you can't do this wrong now. Even if you started walking at like half a mile an hour, you'd still get in. But the weird thing is, it's not really about finishing it. It's amazing to finish it, but it's about the journey. It was honestly about the process and all and how good the process was and like how much fun it was. And I feel so different to Dragon's Back. And I think it's because you can make your own journey on this race. You create your own story in this race. Whereas on Dragon's Back, you're forced into creating the same story as everyone else because you have to go to sleep, you have to do this, you have to do that. But this is like you make the decisions about what you're going to do. No one's going to say to you, you have to have your mandatory kit, obviously, but no one's going to say, take extra layers. If you look at what happened to James Nobles, he didn't take extra layers and he got very, very cold and that's why he had to pull out. Like, that's his decision. Like, what you're taking with you on the hill is your decision. And the decisions you make on the hill are your decisions. And the people you go with, that's your decision as well. I think, yeah, it just was like finishing it is amazing. I still actually haven't got my head around finishing it and I still can't work out why I'm so tired. But then I do keep thinking it was 268 miles and that's quite a long way.
I understand. I know why you're so tired.
Yeah, but you
Yeah.
don't, because you do hundreds and stuff and 200, you're like, why is this so much harder? But it is harder because it's an extra couple of days. And it is really hard,
Yeah.
but I found it way more enjoyable than I found it hard.
Yeah.
Like, way more enjoyable.
Can I also ask, because I was obviously watching your dot, those last from the last hut, and then that. It's so funny. Like, you look at, there was one guy who went really quick the last few miles because it gives you an estimated finish time all the time,
Yeah.
from the last bit. So I had an idea of when you're going to finish. But as usual, you always beat that estimated time. Most people do. But there's one guy who just beat it by about an hour and a half. It was crazy. He just obviously sprinted at the end. But that last bit when I'm watching, and I think it's like, and I can see by the contour. So I'm trying to work out what it must be like for you. But it's probably like the last 3 miles.
Yeah.
What is that like? Is it like, actually, I don't want this to end. This has been such an insane journey and it's going to be over soon. Or is it like, please get me there? Or is it, what was it like literally those last couple of miles? And you're on your own because you weren't, there wasn't anyone near you, I don't think.
No, I've done those smiles so many times,
Yeah,
so many
and
times.
I was thinking you've done it in other than
Yeah.
the
And
summer.
I was like, In my head, I was like, the last 4.5 miles don't count. So I sort of took them off. So when it said, oh, you've got like 15 miles to go, I was like, nah, I need 10 miles to go because really that doesn't count. Then you get to them and you're like, it does fucking count. And you're like, I know I can run this, but I can't run it because my feet hurt too much. I'm too tired and I feel like I'm going to be sick. And so you're sort of walking as fast as you can and jogging at the bits you can jog. It's all downhill and there's quite a lot of road as well. And then you're, but you just can't run it. And also, I spent a lot of time thinking about what I was going to say because at the end they do a little interview with you and I spent a lot of time thinking about what I wanted to say because I wanted to say something that meant something, not just all the bollocks people usually say. And when I was on, and I came to the conclusion, I've come to the conclusion like throughout the race, the thing about the spine is it, whatever it gives you that's good, so it'll give you stuff that's really good, like a clear night with amazing stars where you just, I sat down at one point and leant on my pack and was like staring at the sky. And then I was like, this pack is a fucking burden, but also this pack is what saves me from dying out here. And it acts as a pillow when I want to look at the stars. The sky is super, super clear. And it's beautiful. And I can see Jupiter. I feel like I could touch Jupiter, but that means it's really fucking cold. Like, this snow is great because it means that the bogs are frozen so that we're not going to fall in them. But it also means it's really tough going across the tube, of course, wherever we're going. And that was my conclusion I came to, that fucking race, whatever it gives you, it will take away from you. So you never get a good go because whatever it's going to give, it will then, that giving means taking out. So if it's raining, it's great because it's warm. If it's snowing, it's shit, it's great because it's not raining, but it's also very cold. If there's
Right.
no cloud cover, you see the stars, but it's cold. If there is cloud cover, it's going to be fucking raining and windy. Like, it never gives you anything for free. It's always posing problems, and that's why it was brilliant. Like, to understand that was brilliant, and to be in, to under to like work with nature in that way was brilliant. I fucking loved that. But yeah, I overall it was like one of the greatest experiences I think I've ever had. I don't feel awful or sad about it at all, and I definitely will do it again.
I was going to ask, what's next? Dare I ask?
You know what's next?
5K training,
No,
baby.
no, no, Northern Traverse.
Yeah, there is that. There is a question. We did do some hybrid training for this, and we didn't know if it would pay off, and obviously it did. So, people out there, 5K training. So, you trained for 5K on top of spine training. Did at any point you draw on any of those training sessions that you did?
Yeah, when I was trying to get to Burness, I was like, run fast down the hill.
I think I saw the story. It was, yeah, it was impressive.
Also, can I just say, everybody listening, my legs did not hurt. I did not have bad quads. I did not have bad glutes. At the start, my abductors started to hurt, but then at these races, everything starts to fall to pieces to try and distract you, but then it all puts itself back together again. I have no aches, no pains, no injuries. My feet hurt a bit. And that is because I trained really hard and I did my strength work and Holly put me a really good plan together. But the most important thing I think is the strength work. Because I kept every time when I was going up the hills, up cross fell, down cross fell, here, there, everywhere. And also skidding around on ice, having strong muscles and being able to like right yourself and strong ankles and strong, abductors and strong, even like that stupid fucking starfish plank. I've got a six pack because I could carry that bag. I wasn't leaning. There was no leaning going on. So yeah, all of that really paid off. I think this is like a real like that all of it paid off with spine. So thanks, I guess.
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious, isn't it? People, just do the training that you need to do, and it will just be a much nicer experience, hopefully. If you're going to neglect doing your strength work, especially, and just getting those, we know that you can run long distances all day, every day, but just increasing your base fitness, like your top end, which we tried to do, it's made everything feel a little bit easier, and being stronger, your economy's good, and it just makes the whole experience just a little bit nicer. Yeah, it's not going to be easy. Running nearly 300 miles is not easy, but you can make it a little bit easier just by working hard. And you don't have to spend years doing that. Yeah, it's accumulation of years, but a good block before going into this.
And
And
you've got to manage your expectations as well. Like that, it takes a lot longer than you think it's going to take. There is a lot of fast hiking. There is a lot of running, but there's also a lot of fast hiking, and there's a lot of admin, and there's a lot of keeping your head on your shoulders. Like it is hard in those checkpoints when your body is falling to pieces, and you're just so tired. But you've just got to learn how to do it. It's learning. It's all of the things I've ever done before came to a head especially with admin. Okay, you can't learn that. You can't learn sleep. You can't learn sleep deprivation. You can't learn admin. You have to go and learn it on an event. And I think without the experience I had doing that, it would have been really difficult. And there were lots of people that I was able to help and who were able to help me because they had loads of experience. So yes, there was some mansplaining, but that was quickly squashed. So much fucking mansplaining. Yeah, it's something to be massively respected, I think, a race like that, but definitely something I reckon I could do. I definitely would do it again. I had such a good time.
I mean, the only reason why I'd ever want to do it is because I really want to taste that lasagna.
I had four lasagnas on the when I got in, and then I went to bed,
Love
and then I got up and I
lasagna.
ordered another lasagna. It was very, very nice.
Is it like the best lasagna you've ever had? Because everyone talks about
Yeah,
it.
it
It looks
is, because
amazing.
you're really fucking hungry. So I had that. So it was very nice. It was quite greasy, but I had the meat lasagna. I also had a sausage casserole at Bellingen where I took the sausage out because I didn't want the vegetable one, and that was delicious. And it was like a sausage casserole on mashed potato with onion gravy. One of the sad things that happened was I didn't actually have any horrendous hallucinations.
I was going to ask about hallucinations. That is
Yeah,
sad.
I didn't have any. But this is a funny story about my friend Lawrence, who rang his girlfriend, his wife, while we were. I was in. I'd finished, and I was sharing a house with him. And I was on the phone to him, and he was saying to her, Lawrence is a really happy guy. So all he can think about is when the sun's going to come up. I can't wait for the sun to come up. And he kept saying, I know the sun's going to come up, but it hasn't come up yet. Why hasn't it come up yet? It's like 8 o'clock. Why hasn't it come up yet? It should be coming up. And he thought it was 8 o'clock in the morning, but it was 8 o'clock at night.
God,
Yeah.
that's a big time lapse. That is like a black hole.
And I had to literally, and I had to explain that's what wasn't going to happen. And yes, the sun was going to come up, but it wasn't going to come up now.
Did like your message that you sent me, which I played to my mum, which she thought was quite funny, about Hadrian's Wall, about how you felt about Hadrian.
He could get fucked. Actually, Hadrian's Wall was beautiful because I was in the daylight. I had quite an exciting experience on Hadrian's Wall because it was really lovely, but it is bollocks. He should have just built it down the bottom.
Yeah.
And also, there's loads of grouts and stuff in Hadrian's Wall. There's also concrete in it.
Oh, yeah, you did say about that. Yeah. I mean, I knew that you were having a reasonably good time because of the level of the voice notes that I had and how good they were. You know, I've got lots over the last probably 18 months to two years that have been absolutely diabolical. And I can, you know, they're just awful. Whereas these were actually pretty good. They were quite funny. So
Yeah, I mean,
That was good. I should put a whole collection together, make an album or
I
something.
don't think that, I don't think I sent you any, did I, Kelsey?
No, I don't think
No,
so.
no sadnesses. Brilliant.
I had no like massive swear fits or anything. It was pretty good.
Pretty boring, really, isn't it? Sorry, everybody. There's no drama here. I just had a really nice time.
It's so good though, because it's so good that you feel that way and it's been a positive thing and you had a great time and that's all you can ask for, isn't it?
The only problem is now I think it's easy because I'm like, I did it, so it must be easy. That is something I need to talk to my therapist about. I do not
Yes.
understand how to go, hey, that is not easy, and you should be really proud of the work you put in and how hard you worked. Instead of going, oh, well, if you've done that, it must be easy. Like, you should be doing it better, which is absolute nonsense. I wonder where that comes from. That's interesting, isn't it? Do you two get that?
What, that you think something's easy?
If you've done it, like Kirsty had, like with the tour, do you feel like, if I've done the tour must be easy? Or could you see how hard the tour is?
Never think that.
Well, I mean, I'm much more middle of the pack, so I feel like if I can do it, then it's like quite achievable. But I don't feel like it's easy, but I feel like if I could do it, anybody could do it.
That's how I feel.
Yeah.
Like, if I could do it, anyone could do it. Like, I don't feel like, oh, that was the hardest thing I've ever done. Because it wasn't the hardest thing I've ever done. It was fucking hard, believe me. It's a big old slog, but it wasn't the hardest thing I've ever done.
I guess the question would be to ask the people who win it. And then the people who are like chasing cutoffs as well.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see what their take on it is, because
Yeah.
I think that everyone does it in a different way. Like the fact that, like, if you look at Anna, who only had 8 hours dwell time, you know, like how she seems pretty chipper at the end, but it's like how.
I mean, she didn't. She had a lean on and she was holding her own head up.
Oh God, I know the leaning was
Yeah,
really.
so I wouldn't say that was chipper.
But I do you know what I mean? I just think that I think. Yeah, I think it depends on how hard you want to make it.
The thing I cannot bear is the sleep deprivation. Because that to me reminds me of being hungover or drunk. So I feel pissed, I feel hungover, I feel drunk, and that is fucking a no-no for me. I do not like it. It frightens me and it just gives me post-traumatic stress disorder. And when I got, woke up at Langdon Beck after I'd been like all upset, I felt like I had to apologize to everyone at the checkpoint, like I used to when I was drinking. Like I felt like I'd done something terrible and I needed to say sorry to everybody because I felt hungover and exhausted and emotionally fucked. I don't like that. So that's something that I have to work through. And I've spoken to Sam Skinner about this before, like last year when he was doing it, about how it does remind you of the addiction-y stuff and the stuff that you've had before. It's never anywhere near as bad as that, but you really need to watch that because I can see myself getting into a bit of a state around it. Like, and I think I did a Dragon's Back because it just reminds you a lot, and I really don't like it. So good for Anna that she can do 8 hours sleep. I don't know how much more sleep I can take out of that.
No, I mean that. I think the other thing as well is also extremes in terms of climate. So like the fact that you had extremes of it being really, 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 really cold, and then some people will actually thrive in that. That like they're better in it, and then you'll have people who do really well in very, very hot. Like so, for me, the speed project was is complete opposite of yours in terms of horrendous heat, which has affects your stomach as well, like how you're eating and stuff, which has knock on effects. So I think it's like you have extremes as well, and how people deal with it. Some people deal better like bad water or whatever, I don't know. So I think it's working out if you did the same sort of length race, but you did it in like it was in really, really hot conditions in the desert. Like how would you feel then? Is and vice versa. Do you know what I mean? I think that saying that you think it's easy or it's not easy, but you it wasn't that bad and you can do it again. I don't think that that's I don't even know what I'm trying to say, but I think that all these races are just different, aren't they? And have different scenarios. So I think that if you asked every person, they'd have a different idea. Yeah, if you're at the top, at the front end, going really quick with less sleep. If you're at the back end but you've been out, the people who are coming in later, like they were coming in on Sunday morning.
I know. But even like Damien was like, how come you're not ruined? He's like, when I do this, I'm ruined. I'm like, because you take less time than me. So you're pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing. And I am ruined, but I'm not like, able to get up and do the washing up or like take the dog for a walk or whatever. But I'll go back to sleep again. Like, it's different. And I did everything. I ticked everything. I cuddled all the dogs. I petted all the ponies. I went into all the little places. I did, you don't. You're just like on. Like, and that's just not what I'm
And
built to
that's
do.
mentally and physically exhausting.
Yeah, and that's what you get out. You like that. I don't like that. I like the fact that I can remember the whole route. I like the fact that I saw the beauty in it. I like the fact that even the portal between Bellingham and Burness, I can understand. I've done some research on what's gone on there. I know there was a massive accident there where loads of people were killed. Like, there was a body found in the river in December. Like, of course, it's going to be a bit fucking weird around there. Like, I'm interested in that. I'm interested in the connection with the landscape that I'm in, not winning it. I'm not interested in that. And I definitely would like to go back and have another go, maybe in the one of the short races next year, and then do the big one again another time. But yeah, you do have to remember it's 268 miles, and it is fucking hard, and it's not whatever, and not everyone could do it. And I think the years and years and years of training and mental training and all that sort of stuff just really paid off, and I'm really proud of myself, which I wasn't proud of myself on Dragon's Back. I feel like I didn't get the most out of Dragon's Back because I was so fucked in the head that I should really go back and like enjoy that. Because it's about enjoying it, isn't it? These are the moments of your life. These are the hours of your life.
I think, yeah, I mean, Dragon's Back, you were mentally in a very different state, but in a way, you have to look at that race and think, actually, that was an amazing feat that you did do it and you did finish it because you were not in the right headspace at all before, during, or after. So the
No.
fact that you did it, you've learned a lot from that race. It may not have been nice or fun, though, but you did learn a lot from that. And now from this race, it's been a very different experience and you've learned.
There was quite a lot of this isn't as bad as Dragon's Back.
Yeah, which is crazy.
Then James Nobles was like, I think it's so, because he didn't finish. He was like, I think it's so much harder than Dragon's Back. I'm like, I don't. Because you have your autonomy, you have your ability to make your own decisions. You're not forced into doing things that you don't want to do. So, I think it's much, I just much more enjoyable.
But you went into this race in a much di in a very different headspace.
Yeah, I know.
You were very positive,
Yeah.
and and also like looking forward to it. Dragon's Back, you weren't like that at all.
No. Well, I had a good time. Would recommend 5 out of 5 on TripAdvisor for the good running holiday. That was quite hard.
Spa break. It was a spa break. You got good old polishing from snow, wind.
Did you see my face? It was so swollen and all of my
It
skin fell
was
off.
very sunny. Yeah, it was brilliant.
Now look at my face.
I've got a brilliant picture that Damien sent me of you sitting with a cup of tea, and you look like sort of a nana that's just come off a bus who's
Correct.
like in a storm or something. It's just so funny.
I know. A little fat.
You just look
But the
shell-shocked
reason
in
that
the
all
middle of a
the
bus.
photos, Jamie Rutherford just sent me his photos, they're epic, right? But you can only see my eyes because my hood's up, everything's up. And the reason for that is, yeah, it was fucking cold. I didn't want it on my face. But B, because I do look like someone has put a thing into my mouth and blown my face up and then painted it
Brilliant.
red. It looks like a red balloon.
It's brilliant. And I also big shout out to the content teams because the photos were so amazing. And I think that some of them took a bit of a shine to you because they've got some great photos,
I
especially.
knew them all. So this is the
Yeah.
other thing. I knew them all from like workshops and working with them. Like
So
Tom
good.
Hoyle, I used to coach Tom Hoyle. Chloe does our workshops. Jamie Rutherford does our workshops. Miller, obviously we know Miller, and he had the time of his fucking life on that. He was there. He spent the whole time living in his car. There's a guy called Andrew. He was there, and also I worked for the media team, so I know all the media guys. So it was like nice actually to see them all around. But the thing is, I'm the only person that will allow them to put their camera right in my fucking face. There was a couple of fucking ridiculous things that happened. Like I lost my head torch. I lost it, and I was at the side of a road, like fucking where's my head torch? And then I got my spare head torch, and it wouldn't switch on. So I was like, this is bullshit. I was in Garrigill, so I went back to this checkpoint called Annie's house, which is the house of a woman who lives in Garrigill. She just opens her doors to people. And I had everything out on the floor and I was fucking about for like half an hour. Tom Hoyle was trying to take pictures of me and Annie was trying to make me tea. And I was like, can you just fuck off? Like, I just need to find my fucking head torch. Couldn't find it. Was really pissed off. Got into Alston, like, ran the 4 miles into Alston with my spare head torch. The reason that wasn't working was because the batteries were too cold. Sat there, the cameraman's there, and I'm like, oh, I just lost my head torch. Told this whole fucking story. And then towards the end of the story, I unzipped my waterproof jacket, took it off, felt my puffer, and my fucking head torch was in the pocket of my puffer where I put it to keep the battery warm. So that whole fucking thing was a complete waste of time. But I had found my head torch, so that was good. They love that, the old media team.
Yeah, it was some great photos. Good things to keep forever.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks for listening to my rambles.
Thanks for sharing them. I'm sure that people have had a good old jolly time listening to that on their run.
And also, thanks, Kirsty, for being a quite incredible member of the Spine volunteer team. And also, thanks to everyone that was a member of the volunteer team, because there was 1,000 people working on the Spine, 1,000. And without them, there wouldn't be a race. And they were all so kind and patient to everybody. And they've got no need to do that. They're not going to get a free race place. It doesn't work like that. They get a jacket and a high five. So, massive thanks to the volunteer team. Massive thanks to the Spine for creating such an amazing event. And thanks to everyone that ran it. And we had a lovely time, didn't we? In the end, bedtime. Bedtime. And then the podcast will be back when we're back. We'll be back soon, won't we?
Yeah, I think next week.
No,
No,
not
week
next week.
after.
No, not that. No, no, no. It'll be further away than that. It's further away than that.
Is
Please.
it?
Yeah, we haven't got a fucking topic yet. Good luck on your race at the weekend.
Yes, if I make it. We'll see. We'll see. I'm still on the fence with it, really. I mean, I can't bear having a race there and me saying I'm potentially not doing it. That's my issue.
Be sensible. Kirsty, have you got any races?
Nope.
Do you
Hang
want me to pick one for you?
on a minute,
No,
you
I've got race.
have.
I've got races, but just not
Oh yeah,
imminent.
you've got Hard Rock.
Hard Rock, the best race in the whole fucking world.
Yeah, I'm doing that in July. Yeah.
You don't start training until it gets warm though, do you? There's no point.
Do you guys want to come and do some training in America with me? I need some pacers. You want to come to Cocodona?
We're like,
Silence. It's like tumbleweeds going past.
well, no, I wouldn't be fast enough, but
that's what I think. I won't be fast enough.
oh no, I don't think that's true at all. I can't have paces till 76 miles anyway.
Yeah, I know, but you're quite fast.
No,
I'll tell you what, I'll do the last 25 miles.
you can do as much as you bloody well want. I need all the help I can get.
Okay, we'll have a chat about it.
Chat about
Have a
it.
chat about it. But yeah, I think I won't let you down on that one. Right, I love you. Thank you for doing this. I'll speak to you more soon.
Love you. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the Running Won't Save You podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, would you mind nipping to Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your pods, and just leaving us a review, but also hitting that subscribe button? God, I hate saying that, but it really does help
us with our numbers, and that helps us to attract better sponsors, and that means that we can do this more often. So if you can do that, we will be very grateful. We are on Instagram. It's at Running Won't Save You Pod. And just a quick shout out to some people who I personally support and would love for you guys to check out as well. They are the Green Runners. You can join the Green Runners, get yourself a patch and feel very smug. Pair Ups, who will fix shoes. They send you shoe fixing kits. Look them up on Instagram. Pre-Loved Sports, don't buy a new kit. You don't need it. The most sustainable kit you've got is the kit you're already wearing. So head to Pre-Loved Sports website and you'll be able to buy amazing kits super cheap. I bought a Montane Gecko vest the other week for like £30 and I wore it for the Dragon's Back. It was incredible. Into Ultra are a charity who work to make ultra running available to everybody, helping pay for coaching, helping pay for physio, helping pay for race entries. So go over and see what they're doing, see if you can help, see if you can donate. And finally, Reaction Collective, who are an incredible group of people who fix kit, who can recycle kit, and who generally have loads of information about how you can be a bit more of a sustainable runner. We will see you next week.